seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
All right, you're welcome along. It is the Ryan Line. It is Nathan and Shane with you a day later than generally advertised. Apologies for that. I could blame the main pod who were 2 days late and say we wanted to give them their own space. Give them their own space for people to listen and enjoy. But unfortunately, I had a very late change in work and I had to cancel and push it back. And Shane has been very accommodating for giving up his Friday morning for the Ryan Line. How are you, Shane Ryan?
Yes, I'm good. Thank you, Nathan. Had big plans this morning. Was going to take a nature walk, have a nice like mental health breakfast to myself, and just catch up with old friends. But instead now, I'm going to grow big and fat, lose all my friendships, and never move again. So, but as long as we can do the show, you know?
Have you touched on something there that is one of the clear signs of hitting middle age, which is a breakfast by yourself?
Yeah.
Is there anything more glorious than a breakfast by yourself?
Do you have this feeling, though? Do you have this thing where you think it's going to be glorious, and then you go there and you realize you've been so ruined by the internet and having kids screaming at you all the time and all the stuff that you're just sort of bored and you're like, God, this sucks.
But also, I'm like, what is there? What can I enjoy? I'm sitting here on my phone having breakfast, 100%. Which I could have just done at home. I thought I would be getting away and, you know, as you say, at one with nature or something. But no, I'm just eating an unhealthy breakfast. But because it's out of the house, I feel as though I'm achieving something with my life.
True. Yeah. Right. Just getting out is nice. I used to, before kids, I would go on a Saturday and go to a bar and bring a book and watch college football, sip a beer, read a book in between by myself. Oh. And those were glorious times. And now it's like, I don't know if I could do that anymore, even if I had the opportunity, which I don't. It's just like, I don't know. I feel like I've been ruined for it. I don't know maybe when I'm old. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. Our extra 24 hours has allowed us to get some questions in on really the only story in golf right now. I was watching this last night at about, what was it, probably 10:30 Irish time. And I watched Shotty? Are we calling him Shotty now? Shotty.
Oh boy.
Shotty. Tough
stuff, dude. What a burn.
So on 16, the par 3, and he sticks it in the water. And bit by bit, we're like, oh, that Scotty had a little bit of reaction. Oh, and he seems to be raising his voice towards Ted Scott and seemed to have a tone to his voice there as Ted Scott was saying something to him. And I can't hear what you're saying. And 15 minutes later, Scotty is still ranting, at which time I'm like, bloody hell, this is going to be the only story of the week. And I think that is, unless we get something very dramatic on Sunday night, the case. So we have a few questions on this. I got a DM on Instagram, which I never usually get. You can DM me. I don't even know what my Instagram thing is. Nathan Murphy at Nathan Murph on Instagram. You can DM me your questions if you want that way as well. I'll probably see them. Interested in yourself and Shane's thoughts on Scotty's rant tonight. His true colors finally showing are something that happens with every player and caddy.
Yeah, it was something. It's so funny the way it plays out, the dynamic where he's very clearly mad at Ted Scott, but he kind of knows enough not to directly say it. But he's just like, you don't know how frustrating this is. Like he's just completely pissed off. And it's also hard to know if he's correct, right? It's you kind of trust him a little bit, but then you're like, we've all been in that situation where my thing is just like, I've clearly lost my keys, but I'm so mad that I've lost my keys again that to my wife, I'm like, would you stop moving things without telling me? And she hasn't. She clearly has. It's clearly on me, but I'm just like, I need somebody else to blame in that moment. And even if it makes me an asshole for a second, I need to do it. So there was that where it's like, I don't know if that was completely Ted Scott's fault. That seems like you overcooked it. That whole thing where he's like, there's no way it could spin that much. It's like, there's no way my keys could be in the bathroom. Why would I bring my keys to the bathroom. Clearly somebody else did this. So yeah, I don't know. I remember back when Bubba Watson was with Ted Scott. This was the, you know, poor Ted Scott. He's been through the ringer.
Pray for Ted.
But that was the ultimate. Yeah, pray for Ted. That was the ultimate example of a tough guy to deal with. In a different way, Jordan Spieth and Greller, but Spieth was more just neurotic. He wouldn't like yell at Greller. He would just kind of be talking through things endlessly. But yeah, Bubba Watson would say, you know, like, oh, there's water on the club. Like, he would just be constantly yelling, wrong club, wrong club. And I talked with Michael Collins. Do you know Michael at all? Like, you know of him at least, right?
I know of him, yes.
Yeah, so he used to be a caddy. He caddied a little bit. Now he's a kind of an ESPN personality. But I remember him telling me, I wrote an article about it way back when, that basically it's like, you know what? These guys need to let stress go at certain times. And I would rather be, even if it's kind of embarrassing, I would rather be with a guy like that than somebody who doesn't kind of deal with you honestly. That, you know what I mean? Like, basically, it's like that kind of like letting out steam is fine. That's just part of the dynamic. I bet Scotty would apologize later, all that stuff. So that it doesn't really, as much as some other Scotty stuff, it doesn't faze me that much. I think the only thing, though, Nathan, is that because there are cameras, it's just the nature of things that everybody is going to see that. And that's the problem. That's the problem. It's all good to apologize later. The problem is you're kind of semi humiliating, maybe a strong word, but it's kind of an embarrassing situation for everybody. And nobody's going to see the atonement, right? Unless you make it public. Everybody's just going to see this and kind of have to see Ted Scott just take it. So I don't know. But overall, it's like, you know, he did kind of couch it in these sort of he was from a distance complaining. And so I don't know. I'm like, you know what? A guy going through it, that's okay. It didn't make me dislike him or anything. I was like, well, okay, you deserve that. You can have that moment.
And again, what do we want from this guy? Oh, you're too boring, yeah. Scotty. You never show any emotion. Does he care? There's no fulfillment in this life. Actually, he's playing at a signature event, which we all question their importance and how much the players really care about this. And he's bloody pissed off and he's putting it all out there. And look, he's the world number one player. There's always going to be a focus on it. The bit that this is the real Scotty Scheffler, that this was Scotty pre-Ted Scott, who ran hot all of the time. And when he was a college kid and when he was a top class youngster, that this was him, and that actually Ted Scott brought a level of zen to Scotty. Was that your feeling watching this, that actually maybe if Ted Scott and Scotty hadn't met, firstly Scotty may have never had the success that he had, but actually Ted Scott's greatest achievement is that he's stopped Scotty having one of these rants every round?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. I think Scotty has probably just grown on his own, too. But yeah, there's that famous story where Ted Scott, at the beginning when they met, basically said, you know, I don't know if I want to work with you, if you're not going to grow up, blah, blah, blah. So I think Scotty's probably done a ton of work on himself, too. Reminds me a little bit of Roger Federer. This was the thing that when Federer was coming up, he was apparently the biggest hothead. Like, he would be very emotional. What's interesting about it with both of them is that especially Scotty looks like a big, tough jock, but the way it plays out when he gets mad is not like slamming his club against a tree or breaking over his leg. It's kind of whining. It's like being whiny a little bit. It's just kind of going on these extended monologues where it's just like, you have no idea how frustrating this is, right? And so,
what makes,
you know,
the whole thing so great is that Ted Scott, not only does he not even respond, his facial expression never changes for the entire thing. Yeah. It's like, it's the greatest example. We would all love to be that person as a parent when your child is having absolute meltdown and ranting and raving, that you would just, again, calmly sit there, know that it's going to pass, you know, not do the thing we all do, which is react and probably make it worse. That just go, actually, let them have their 10 minutes. It's fine. They'll blow themselves out here. And actually, that every time the camera went to Ted, who's just...
he's just like on his notebook.
Do you really want me to fight back here and go, I told you that the wind was coming in from the right. He ignored me.
I know. Speaking of kids, I saw this on Reddit first. I missed it during the day, and I saw it last night. And the top comment was, it's a hell of a thing going from one to two kids. I was like, yeah, that probably explains part of it. But yeah, no, Ted Scott was hilarious. Just an absolute statue. Just a complete statue. It was so funny.
Do you think, again, trying to read deeper into one moment, and let's not forget, he did birdie the next hole, though somewhat miraculously, and what would have his mood like have been if he hadn't? Do you think this was the frustration of the season coming out at that moment? And again,
Yeah.
it's a weird thing to talk about with Scotty because his shocking form is third, second, second, second.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is. I think it is definitely that. I think, I don't think no matter who you are, you're going to judge yourself by your former standard. And so Scottie Scheffler knows he can win a bunch of events, and he knows he's not right now. So, like you said, you had those runs of form, and then his last one, he was, like 24th or something. And now here, he's kind of middle of the pack. So it's like it doesn't seem to be getting better. So I think you're starting to see that frustration. Yeah, 8,000%. This is like anything, right? Like when you. We keep bringing it back to kids, or I do, but it's like when you yell at your kid, right? It's like it's not necessarily the thing they just did. It's that you have it's been an accumulation of things, and you no longer can tolerate it without some kind of like steam being let off. So yeah, that's what we saw. It's I find this very forgivable. Of all the things that I've kind of gotten annoyed with Scotty about, and there haven't been that many, but this I don't know. This was to me, this was like. I like you said, I enjoyed seeing this aspect of his personality in this moment where he's just very unhappy.
A couple of more questions on this. Question for Shane. Will the US journals, that's you, be as quick to
Yep.
criticize Scotty as they were to criticize Shane for how he treated his caddy?
This is terrible, but what is I actually just read this. What is he referring to? I should know. What did Lowry do to his caddy?
So Lowry at very with his previous caddy, with Bo, there was a couple of incidents, not dissimilar, where he would hit a poor shot and he would take it out on the caddy, and there would be, he was probably a little bit
Yeah.
more, there was maybe more you in Shane Lowry's than Scotty's, which was,
Yeah.
I, we all know I'm talking about you, but I'm not going to say it. I just hit an incredible golf shot to exactly where I told you I was going to hit it, and then that thing happened.
Yeah.
Why do we think that might have happened? Shane's
Yeah.
was, and again,
Jesus. Yeah.
It similar scenario where Bo just took it, and there was almost that sense then of getting into that player caddy relationship of, oh well, like is this bullying? Is this proper workplace behavior? And you
Yeah,
say
right.
the caddies know the gig, like it's what you sign up for. It's not to necessarily say it's always right and proper, but
Yeah.
Shane, as we know, also can blow hot, and that if you take his bag, you understand you're going to have to take a little bit of that for right or for wrong. Like when Shane blew up at the Cognizant, was it earlier this season? Like as far as I'm aware, he didn't turn to Darren Reynolds and blame him. He knew himself it
Yeah,
wasn't a
oh yeah.
caddy issue. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I think Shane probably got it, and again because it was caught on camera at just the wrong time. It's probably stuck with him a little bit, I think, in terms of how he spoke to his caddy at that moment.
Well, it's kind of funny because we're laughing at the idea that Scotty is like doing this monologue to the universe, going, "Who is to blame for such things?" Where it's clearly talking about the caddy. But you know what? There's like in life, there are reasons we do these kind of things that seem sort of silly, but provide a little bit of a cushion maybe between the obvious thing that we're doing, which is blaming the caddy, but between the direct nasty confrontation of what it implies. And so it's like there's a certain amount. As crazy as it sounds, there's a certain amount of respect there. Even though, the best thing would have been to like talk to him after the round or something. But in that moment where you're like, I need to let off steam, there's a certain amount of restraint being shown by Scheffler, and respect for Ted Scott of not like laying into him, right? Not just going, you piece of shit, you're killing me here. And so there is something. I think maybe we'd have to hear from Ted Scott, but I think that's maybe something you can appreciate that in the moment he didn't broadside him. He did kind of like couch it in these kind of weird ways. There, I know it sounds like the very small differences, but there is a difference between that. And again, I'd have to see the Lowry incident. I for some reason I've missed this. I'd have to, but there is a difference between that and just like straight up yelling at a guy. And the way we talked about, how Scotty shows his anger, Lowry would be the example of almost what you'd expect Scheffler to do by the way he looks, Lowry would be the guy who is just going to go at you. And it's like when he makes a bad shot and doesn't like a course, he says, you know, fuck this place. I mean, he's that alpha testosterone, emotional kind of like rage guy. And so I can see there being a difference there. I mean, yeah, I didn't attack Shane Lowry for his caddy. So I can't totally take the blame for this question, but it does sound like there is some material difference there. Am I BSing there? Is there justification?
No, I think you're probably right. And again, both of them are a way a player copes, and the caddy sort of knows what they're signing up for with the player. I wonder could Scotty blame like the gods? I wasn't talking about Ted Scott. I was talking about the wind. And we had both agreed. And then the wind just appeared out of nowhere. It just appeared out of nowhere. And I was just cursing the weather for 10 minutes in a slightly insane way. One more question on this from James L. Hi, lads. Why wouldn't the commentator shut up during Scotty's rant?
Yeah, well, I know. I think it's hard. I think it's hard when your job is to comment on things, to totally realize exactly what you're seeing. And I think that it's very, that would have been, maybe it would have been the best move, but I think it's actually difficult. And honestly, I would say it's not on them. You know, everybody talks about when Tiger won in 2019, Jim Nance was quiet from, I think he, you know, had one line when Tiger made the putt and then 3 minutes of silence while he went through. But there was someone in the production truck, and this I only know because of the Netflix doc on it. Someone in the production truck was like, don't say a fucking word, like, let it play out. And they did. And then they kind of like knew when to do it. So it's not all on the announcers. I mean, their job is to kind of call what they're seeing. If somebody thinks this moment has enough gravity to like shut up and just let it play out, that can come from the production truck. But it's hard to recognize, right? This isn't Tiger winning the Masters. This is a guy, and you don't know he's going to keep going. So what do? Just stay silent? What if he stops talking for 30 seconds? I think that's not as easy as it seems.
Yeah, I agree with you in some ways. I think they should nearly just have a rule that if a player and caddy are talking to each other, you just don't say anything. And
you're
again,
right.
It's
you're
difficult
right.
because... You know, and I'm not sure what commentary feed you were getting. Again, even though it's a signature event, we're getting the world feed commentary. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Sky have only one person on the ground. Nick Doherty's back in a studio in England. Rob Lee, I'm not sure if Rob is there or if he's on a site somewhere off course with the other commentators. It's harder when you're doing that to get a feel of what's happening as opposed to when you're right there. And again, maybe that's a bit of a free pass because they're never standing right at it. But I do wonder if just the second you hear a player, because you're on air for 6-8 hours, you're always going to have time to say the thing you want to say. That actually, if a player and caddy are chatting, however inane it usually is, just let them at us.
Just let them at us.
Because I was like, I think Scotty just cursed, but you were kind of half talking through it.
Yeah. Totally agree. No, I think that's a great rule. Do you remember when Greller and Spieth were talking at the Masters that one year? And I think it was on, like, I think maybe, yeah, it was just on one of the mornings, like Thursday morning, but it was just so fascinating. And it was that thing where nobody talked. And I think that nobody talked because it was just like, this is one of our morning feeds where basically it's just a camera. But it was great. I mean, that's the really good stuff. I would watch a whole show of that, Nathan.
Question for Shane. Russell Henley is seen as one of the best putters on tour, yet he missed the biggest putt of his career at the Ryder Cup. Would you rather be a great putter across the season or better at holding the putts that matter?
I mean, what a question. Come on. He had missed a putt at the Ryder. I mean, you don't make every putt, even if you're the best putter on tour. Yeah, I don't know. Russell Henley had a very tough Ryder Cup. Okay, he lost twice with Scottie Scheffler, and then he had to sit there and watch Lowry, you know, do what fate always dictated Lowry was going to do, which was be like the ninth best player on his team, but hit the winning putt and have this memory forever. Yeah, it just sucked. But I mean, he missed a putt. What are you going to do? It's like, it's so funny where it's like, oh, if you were clutch, you would have hit that putt. It's like, no, not everybody's Tiger Woods. Like, you don't even if you're one of the clutchest putters ever, you do miss sometimes. And his putt was longer than Lowry's. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think Russell Henley's doing just fine. I thought he was pretty clutch making four birdies at the end of the last tournament and then winning in a playoff. You know what I mean? So I don't like the question, Nathan.
Wow.
My poor boy, Russell. I love Russell Henley.
Current best putter on tour, Vince Whaley, followed by Jacob Bridgman, Jake Knapp, Akshay Bhatia, Bo Hostler, Sam Burns, great putter, as we know. Great putter.
Yep.
Top six. Where is Russell Henley? Russell Henley is not anywhere to be seen on he is 39th currently.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that means you're way above average putter, right?
I guess what it does is it puts you in a position to have more putts that matter.
Yeah. Well, what's funny about it is that, you know, like putting is the one where, like, look at those names you just read. You know what I mean? Whereas if you go to strokes gained approach, I would bet you anything the name reads like, yeah, like Morikawa, Scott, Koepka, Fitzpatrick. You know, wow, Scheffler's only 15th. It's kind of has been a fall for him. But anyway, putting's weird. And the best putters on tour every year reliably are not people who win tournaments. And it's the stat that matters the least, which is crazy, of the main like strokes gained stats. So and it is what it is. Like, you know, Scheffler's the best player in the world, but I mean, he's never one of the best putters. So,
Shane, do you think the players genuinely care about winning at Jack's Place?
Yeah. But, well, I guess the question is not just like, obviously they'd all love to win the Memorial for a million reasons, but do they consider it more important there than anywhere else? Or is there something special about the place or about Nicklaus that's like, oh, I really want to win here? Probably for most of them, no, I would say. If I'm reading the question correctly, I don't think there's any that's like, oh my God, it's the four majors, the players, and then Jack's Place. That's the one. That's the place you got to have in the resume. Probably not.
Was Spieth, when he was talking to Jim Furyk earlier in the week, implying that it was sort of the majors, then the players, and then the Memorial, or was he talking more about the difficulty of the golf course and comparing? Jim Furyk seems to have become a TV personality, which is a bizarre development, I think we can all agree. And was going around interviewing players, and he was chatting to Spieth, and Spieth mentioned that he'd been at Memorial since Sunday. He came in early, brought the family in because he treats it like a major because it's such a difficult golf course. So he feels he wants to get that extra prep in. But there was a bit where it did sound like he was implying that this tournament is almost on the next level down from a major. But you're right. Like, I can't imagine many players at the start of the season are, what are your goals? I want to shake Jack's hand as I walk off on 18.
Right. But yeah, I think that's a great point. The course is awesome. I mean, in terms of how difficult it is, that's really cool. I'm sure they get up for that. And then I think it just where it is in the calendar functions as a pretty important U.S. Open test, appetizer, whatever, where it's like, this is a small taste of what you're going to get in a couple weeks every year at the, you know, the most difficult setup of the year, usually.
Another interesting, these actually, the two sort of similar questions came in the same email. If the PGA was only held at one course all year, so 40 events at Sawgrass, do you think we'd get the same spread of winners across the year, or would four or five players win all 40?
It's a great question. That's a really fun question. You would get less of a spread than a normal year, 100%. You would get the same people playing well. I don't think you'd get just four to five winners. I think you'd get more than that. But however many winners you have in, you know, your 40 events where you're all over the country in California and the desert and Florida, you know, the Northeast and the Lynx courses in the UK, you would get far fewer than that. You would get, it wouldn't be four or five, but it would be, you know, compared to like 35 different winners, you'd get 20 or something like that. That would be my take.
It sounds like the type of thing that they could have ended up doing during COVID.
Yeah. As an experiment.
We're just going to bring you all to Sawgrass. It would be an interesting experiment. It's obviously never going to happen. But if you were to say, actually, we're just going to play Sawgrass all year round and we'll put up with whatever conditions are there. So again, you know, middle of summer, Florida, you mightn't be too keen on that. But then at other parts of the year, you know, it's hurricane season. We're still here at Sawgrass.
We're at Sawgrass. It's, you know what it's like? It's like when you're... you have a meal and you're like, that was so good, I could eat that for every meal. But if they ever put you to it, 2 weeks later, you'd be like, I never want to see this food again. I never want to see mushroom bisque again. I think that would be terrible. Everybody would hate it. But it would. I wish it had happened so we could have that data to go. Here's what happens when you play the same course like 30 times in a year.
How long, I wonder, would it take then the guys, just trying to think of specific courses that players don't like or players don't enjoy, if they were having to play it 40 times, how long would it take them to adapt their game to fully appreciate it and be able to contend at it?
That's a great question. What if this was the reality, every court you're playing the same course over and over, and it's all about how your game. What if golf had developed where there was one course at the beginning that somehow you were able to duplicate, and everybody was like, St. Andrews is the best course ever. Every single golf course we ever make is going to be exactly like St. Andrews. Everything was the same. So it wasn't just about it wasn't about having adaptable skills and ball striking. It was specifically tailoring your game to a specific kind of course. A, that would suck. That would be horrible. But B, it would be fascinating to go like, nobody even knows how to hit a fade because at this one template course, you only have to ever hit a draw. So everybody does that. It'd be pretty funny.
Final one, was watching the Austrian Open last week. Very scenic surroundings, the Austrian Open up in the Alps. Would have been a nothing event without Sepp Straka. Should all players be mandated to play their home tournaments?
Yeah, because I can never be held to this and it can never be enforced, I'll just say yes. should.
We can't convince players to play at a tournament 5 miles from where they live with a $20 million prize fund. But you know what? Camille Vigegas, it's time for you to go home, buddy. There's a 200 grand prize fund, but off you go.
Yeah, who would have it the worst? like that's a good one. Camille having to go play the Venezuela Open in the middle of the like, oh crap. Here's what I think.
Nico Echeverria from? Is he Venezuelan?
He's Venezuelan as well. He's Venezuelan, yeah. I think the answer to this is yes, but it should be where you live, not where you're from. And so it's like Lowry should have to play the Cognizant, which I know he does every year, but they should make a big deal of it as his national open, the Cognizant Classic, Rory. And then we can maybe get these guys to start staying in, their home country, Nathan, instead of all your top athletes betraying you and moving to Florida.
Wow. Well, it wasn't that when Greg McDowell won the US Open at Pebble, Rory McIlroy said he was delighted to see that he'd won his home open.
look at him now. I mean, how quickly things change.
I think actually Sepp Straka might be the one who's making the biggest sacrifice for his home open. I'm looking down at the various, so again, playing a Spanish Open, all right, financially maybe not what it once was, but John Rahm can do it. Ludvig, if he had to play the Swedish, Victor Hovland and Christopher Reitan if they were having to go back and play.
Is there a Norwegian Open? I mean, is there such a thing?
I don't think there is a Norwegian Open.
Is there even a tournament there? Yeah, so they'd have to You'd have to play the biggest event there, which would it'd probably be fine for them. They could go home. It would more suck for everyone else who had a chance to win, and all of a sudden like Hovland and Raitan are coming and have no business being there. It's like the Club Pro Championship of Oslo, and you're like, what the hell? Why is Victor Hovland here?
The Norwegian Challenge is a tournament on the Challenge Tour, but is it still hasn't been in operation since 2017, which is very upsetting considering they're now going through their golden era of golf with Christopher Reitan, who Christopher Reitan would put Maverick McNealy in his place when it comes to the cash.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Basically owns the Scandinavian version of Tesco, which is,
I have to be honest there. I got caught.
I just threw you with a. So Christopher Reitan's
That was dishonest of me but it was because I've had too many things so far where I'm like, what are you talking about? Sorry, so when you said this, I was just like 100%. No, so he's from a wealthy Norwegian family.
I don't know. my understanding from reading up on it when he won a few weeks ago, Tesco would be the sort of British and Irish version, would be, I don't know, Walmart.
Right. No, I know Tesco. I know it's a good Tesco sandwich.
Yes. So, yeah, very, very wealthy.
Wow. Crazy. I didn't. Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, it's not surprising, right? You need that. You need that money to compete in this sport.
Particularly when you're from Norway. You don't even have a challenge tour event.
Right. I wonder, like, as a kid, I wonder if they just flew him everywhere. I wonder if he was always somewhere warmer
I presume,
in the summer.
Yes, in the winter. Life was a bit more comfortable for Christopher than maybe some of his golfing, who can only play for 8 days a year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
right.
There you go.
It was a bit messy. Messy this week. We're better on a Thursday, I think.
Well, I think though people saw us in our real forms. You know, I think they saw us. We're kind of like Scotty, Nathan. We're like, this is
we're letting
you know,
it all out there.
We're letting it all out.
There's an underlying anger towards each other, but we're sort of slightly pushing it to the side.
I like the idea of you being like, look, you know, you just don't know how frustrating it is when someone doesn't know a specific incident with a caddy with Shane Lowry. It's just so hard. It's so hard to have a conversation.
When I make a funny quip about Christopher Reitan's wealth and you can't pick up on that, that makes
you can't say you. You can't say you. Sorry.
That makes people not feel good about their knowledge of Christopher Reitan's wealth.
You have no idea how frustrating that is.
This guy won on the PGA Tour 3 weeks ago, and his only thing is he's absolutely loaded. Am I alone in knowing this?
Good. That was really good. And I'm just there. I'm just here like on my phone, just being like, yeah.
Nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. Get your questions in on the Discord channel, and you can email golfweekly at offtheball.com, or you can now just DM me on Instagram. If you want as well, all of that is fine. Next Thursday, Shane, we're 2 weeks away from the US Open.
Yeah, still not
You're
yet.
You're going to Shinnecock, are you?
Oh yeah, I'll be there. I'm excited for it. I think that's like these are legendary US Opens, the last two at least. So I'm pumped.
All right, bring it on, Shane Ryan. Thank you as ever.
See you, Nathan.
Starter kid, right?